Welcome to the Purity Podcast, the show designed to reach men fighting for sexual purity. We will share our experience, strength, and hope to help men overcome sexual addiction or compulsive sexual behaviors. So, whether you're new to the journey or a seasoned veteran, welcome. Welcome to the Purity Podcast. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 9 where I'm flying solo again. Have you ever come across someone who's had several years or maybe even double-digit years of sobriety? How do they do it? What does healthy sobriety look like and how can that lead us to healthy recovery? Today is the first installment of something I like to call Chrisdom. Some pro tips, lessons learned, and sobriety hacks. Basically things I've learned along my 5+ year journey that have helped me maintain sobriety and have healthy recovery. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy. In episode 7, I talked a little bit about my early stages of recovery. Things I did away with, changes I made, things I stopped, and things I started. Today, I'd like to share some practical or pro tips that I learned along the way. So, when my kids were younger, they revealed to me an observation that they noticed about me, a tell, if you will. They observed that when they were performing a task, whether it was big or small, and I was watching or helping, before offering advice or showing them a quote-unquote better way to do that, I would scratch the top sides of my head with both hands. It got to a point where one day my son was doing something and he casually looked up to me and said, "You're about to scratch the side of your head, aren't you?" Well, while it's definitely a part of my character defects, it became a source of humor for our family, to the point where one day my wife told the kids that they should appreciate my wisdom. In fact, she said, "We should call it Chrisdom." To which my son quickly retorted, "Chris Dumb." We all laughed, but Chrisdom stuck, as did Chris Dumb. But anyway, so today I'd like to offer you some Chrisdom, some pro tips, lessons learned, and just some oddball things that I do to help aid me in my recovery. Hopefully you'll be able to tell which are which, but without further ado, here we go. So the first thing on my list is own your own stuff. Now, I love Jesus, but I'm known to cuss a little, but only if there seems to be no clean word to emphasize the point. So, if you and I were talking, just the two of us, I might say a different word than stuff. Sorry, but a softer word just doesn't do justice to what I needed to own. So what does this mean? What does it mean to own your own stuff? For me, it meant taking responsibility for everything I'd done in my addiction. Now stay with me here, because this ride's going to get a little bumpy, and it's going to sound like I'm telling you to turn into like this yes, dear coward who won't stand up for himself. Yes, I'm attending meetings, going to therapy, digging into scripture, attacking my sexual sin like I'm fighting hell with a water pistol, all that. But this is not the time for me to expect applause from my wife, right? This is not the time for me to defend myself with retorts like, "Don't you see that all the work I'm doing?" Or, "I said I was sorry." Or even just to correct her about certain facts, like, "It wasn't that number of women, it was only blank," you know, whatever. Or some people might say, "It was just pornography," etc. No. This is the time to hold the bucket. And we'll get to that point in a second, but that's a different Chrisdom. Anyway, I'm not gonna lie. Early in my recovery, I sometimes felt like Rocky. You remember Rocky, where he fought the Russian guy? I don't remember, if maybe Rocky 4 or something like that. Anyway, you'll probably remember, and I'll get emails or text messages about that. Anyway, I just felt like I was getting pummeled. I mean, just beat up. And you know what? I deserved it. So what did I do in those beatdowns? I stood there and took it. I owned it. I validated every feeling, every pain, every heartache. And I did so by validating my wife's feelings. I validated her feelings and emotions with phrases like, "You're right, I was selfish. You have every right to feel that way. I would feel that way too." And with every validation, I was owning my own stuff. I wasn't defending myself. I was just taking the punches. And to me, this is not a yes, dear, cowardly act. It is the actions of a man who took responsibility and was doing everything I could to love my wife through this huge disaster that I had caused. So, next piece of Chrisdom. Time does not heal all wounds. I'm often asked how long it will take for my wife to forgive me. That's the question people ask. And my answer is, It's like a, it's like the answer a military guy would give you if you asked him how many push-ups he could do. Do you know what the answer would be? His answer would be all of them. In other words, for me, I will do whatever is required of me. The number doesn't matter. The number doesn't matter because it's a task that I am willing to complete. So how many months or years will it take to see yourself back in a relationship with your wife? All of them. And sadly, I can't promise you that your marriage or your relationship will make it. I can promise you that if you're wrong, that you're wrong if you think that time heals all wounds. And I can promise you that if you don't do recovery well, that your marriage won't make it, or at least a healthy marriage won't be intact. So time doesn't heal all wounds. It's a combination of time and hard work. And that hard work includes sobriety, absolutely. And yes, owning your own stuff and that constant intentional building of trust. Oh, and forgiveness? Forgiveness is honestly nothing I ever sought after. I never needed to hear the phrase, "I forgive you." We'll talk about that more later. Maybe not this episode, but another time for sure. All right. Everything you say and do is either building trust or breaking it. That's my next little chrism. Everything. From when you say what time you'll be home, or answer yes to the question, did you take out the trash? Knowing that you hadn't, but that you could get it to the curb before she found out that you hadn't already. That's lying by omission. Meaning something like, did you look at porn in your study last night? And the answer is no, because you actually looked at porn on the back patio. I'm just telling you that everything you say and do is either building trust or breaking it. Build that trust back like you're trying to put together the Lego Millennium Falcon. That's 7,541 pieces, okay? Next, work with your therapist to schedule an appointment for your wife. Now, I'll be brief on this, but it's because it's a much longer topic, but here's what I mean. If you have acted out significantly to the point where you know the significance of the trauma and pain you're going to cause your wife with a disclosure or a confession, please, please, please work with a CSAT to help find a therapist for your wife, and preferably to have an appointment scheduled for her. Again, work with your therapist to sort this out. Each situation is different. I get that. But that's one thing I really wished I could have done. I knew nothing about sexual addiction. Now that I do, I'm just telling you, if you could make that happen for your wife, it's a huge thing. It ended up taking my wife something like, 18 to 20 days to get in to see someone, and it was absolutely horrible. So next, embrace the surgery / process. In other words, no shortcuts. Look, I think I've talked previously on an episode about my shoulder surgery, and there's no way to shortcut shoulder surgery recovery, right? There's certain things you have to do, certain things you can't do, and it takes a long time, and it involves a lot of physical therapy. So you need to work with your therapist, a sponsor, and other men in recovery to develop a sobriety and recovery plan. And once that plan is created, work the plan. It's the age-old adage of, if you fail to plan, then you plan to fail. And that's the absolute truth. I harp on this all the time with guys that I mentor, even guys on the telemeetings that I help facilitate. You've got to have a plan in place. If you don't have a plan, you will fail. Next piece of chrism. Get healthy. By this, I mean physically, spiritually, mentally, emotionally. Stopping your acting out does not get you well. Hear that again. Stopping your acting out does not get you well. If you break your arm, you don't get up, brush yourself off, and say, well, I'm never going to do that again. No, you go to the doctor and you take the necessary steps to heal. Then you go through that physical therapy, and the same goes for recovery. There are a ton of resources out there for this. If you need a jump start, email me at puritypodcast@castamonia.org. There's a lot of good things. In fact, a buddy of mine, I don't know if I can say his name, so I won't, but good guy that I reach out to often about physical fitness and things that I could be doing to help myself as I get older, and I'm getting older. Anyway, so I reach out to him a lot to get his advice on things, and usually involves burpees, which I usually hang up on him at that point. Anyway, all right. Next piece of chrism, don't try to fix your family. Again, depending on the extent of your acting out and how involved your kids are in your discovery, Don't try to fix them. Yes, get them counseling if age appropriate and all that, but don't constantly reach out to them trying to explain things or get their forgiveness. This was something that was really important for me. I was out of the house for 54 days, and it was really important in my CSAT, and I talked about this, but I also just knew in my heart that trying to fix my family was not the thing I needed to do. What they needed was a healthy dad, a healthy husband. So don't try to get your kids to take your side. Oh my goodness. If you're trying to get your kids to take your side, do me a favor. Find the closest mirror, look at yourself intently in that mirror, and then slap your face hard, like really, really hard. Do not do that. Please do not try to get your kids to take your side. This is not the time for that. There's never a time for that. So don't try to fix your family. The best way to fix your family is for you to get healthy first and let God take care of the rest. Yes, there are some steps you can take along the way to help make things better, but initially, don't try to fix it. All right, serve your wife and kids. So I lived an hour from my family for those 54 days, but I came back towards the house to work. I worked remotely so that I could be near them. And I wanted to do that so I could help at a moment's notice. I realized that that's my work schedule and my occupation played a huge role in this, and not everyone has that flexibility. But that said, even on the weekends, I would text my wife and ask her if I could come by while they're gone so that I could cut the grass and do laundry and get oil changed in the cars, clean the pool, all that kind of stuff. I wanted to take everything off their plate that I could so that they could focus on their own recovery. And I can say with complete honesty and humility that this was not a tactic to win them back, nor was I trying to play the martyr. I really was just trying to serve. I wanted to serve them so that they could focus on their own recovery. I had hurt them deeply, and the last thing they need to do is worry about who's going to cut the grass or who's going to clean the pool or, you know, do I have clean clothes, who's picking up groceries, that kind of stuff. I wanted to take all of that off their plate. Next piece. You don't have to feel shame to remain humble and broken. Tim Mavergeorge said this to me in one of my first sessions, because there was a time when I would just allow myself to go back to the moment where I disclosed to my kids what I'd done. And I did that as kind of this way to relive it so that I could punish myself and beat myself up to really show myself that I was wrong and that I was ashamed of what I had done and all those things. And Tim just simply looked at me and he said, "Chris, you don't have to feel shame to remain humble and broken." So often I felt like showing and feeling that shame showed everyone else how sorry I was. If I show everybody how shameful I am and, you know, what a horrible person I am, they'll know that I'm really, really sorry. What it really showed was I was a sad and desperate, self-loathing nincompoop. That's what it said to them. And it just really continued to reveal how unhealthy I was and that I was not getting any healthier. So I really had to put that aside and allow myself to say, all right, I don't have to feel shame to remain humble and broken. Next piece, shrink your circles. So early on, I felt the need and responsibility to keep everyone I knew informed. Everyone I knew who knew. You'll try to follow that. You may have to rewind. Anyway, I finally went to my family members, and by that I mean my siblings and my mom and a few other friends who were in the loop, and I just told them that I was going to give them updates less consistently. It was exhausting trying to keep everybody updated early on. I mean, the roller coaster was moving too fast, making turns for the better and for the worse. Often to try and give them the play-by-play, it was just impossible for me to keep up. And it's just better to keep your circles small. We also did that. My wife and I chose to do this as a couple because we wanted to protect our kids. And we didn't want this to be outwardly known exactly what was going on, because we didn't know what the end result was going to be. So just keep your circles small. But I will say, you know, Jesus, when he went to the Garden of Gethsemane, he took the disciples and then he took three disciples further into the garden, and he was with those three, right? And then there was a moment when he went deeper into the Garden of Gethsemane alone. And that's where he asked for this cup to be taken from me. Anyway, keep your circle small. The next piece of wisdom, behavioral change is not enough. So the truth is, I was changing my behavior. And you can too, for a while. What I discovered in my recovery is that behavior change helps early on with sobriety, but it won't last long, and it will certainly not lead to healthy recovery. Behavioral change is simply modifying the external attitudes, actions, and habits while covering up what was really going on in my heart. I was hiding, even ignoring at times, all my emotions. I had fear, anger, disappointment, lust, etc. I was ignoring the gravity of my sin. Don't get me wrong, I knew I'd really messed up and that something had to change. I just wasn't willing or ready to face the consequences. And what I'm talking about here is before I disclosed my wife. I had spent about 6 months of just this changing of my behavior. But I didn't want to be found out, you know. I just bottled up all of that stuff that I'd done, and I just tried to change my behavior. It was like trying to shove a sleeping bag into a duffel bag that was too small. You know, you push one side in and the other side pops out, and you push the other side in and another side squeezes through the top, and so on, right? It's like a Christmas tree going in back into the box it came out of. If you can do that and you have a photographic proof of that, I'd like to see it. There's no Christmas tree that will ever, ever fit back into the box it came out of. Never. Okay. Anyway, I digress. Not only was the sleeping bag never going to fit in the sack, I was exhausted trying to make it fit. Behavioral change is exhausting. I was literally ignoring what was really going on with my emotions and putting on this facade so others would see what appeared to be real change. It was lipstick on a pig. And I mean like a real pig, me being the pig. I was hiding my sin still. I was praying I would be able to take my sin to the grave. And the truth was, hiding it was actually partially digging my grave. Even with all that negativity around behavioral change right there, because I know I said a lot of bad things about behavioral change, when I disclosed, it actually was something that I continued. It was my first step of sobriety and recovery. It's sort of like the analogy of dressing for the job that you want, not the job you have, or fake it till you make it. For me, the behavioral change helped me stay sober early on. Well, that and being scared to death that I'd lose my family, for sure. But since behavioral change isn't enough, then what's next? What has to be that heart change? And so while behavioral change focuses on that outward appearance, heart change focuses inward. Look, I'm not a licensed therapist, and I haven't slept in Holiday Inn Select. If you don't know that old commercial, then shame on you. Just kidding. But what I can tell you from my experience is that if there's no heart change, there is no recovery. And if there's no recovery, then there's no sobriety. You see, for me, I was addicted to much more than sexual addiction. I was addicted to social media, the approval of others, my identity, lying. Heck, I was probably even addicted in some way to my temper that I had. So the next piece of wisdom is hold the bucket. My wife would experience 1,000 different emotions a day, and sometimes many within a matter of minutes. When those emotions were displayed, it was my job to receive them. And I talked about that a little bit earlier, kind of giving the idea of just taking the beating and owning your own stuff. But I just received them. I didn't react to them. I didn't respond to them. I didn't justify myself or defend myself or attempt to make things better by solving the problem. No, it was my job to hold the bucket. And when those emotions come out of my wife, it was like she was vomiting on me. And my job right then is to hold the bucket and let her throw up in it. Through the books I read and my own experiences, I've learned that this was my wife's, the anger and the pain that she was throwing up on me. It was her way of making me feel the pain she was feeling. So it's really important to just sit there and hold the bucket. Let her throw up. She needs to purge all of that stuff out so that she can get it off her chest. And she doesn't need you to try to fix her. She doesn't need you to try to defend yourself or anything else. And so often, I just really believe this. So often, I think for me, it would have been easy for me to just sit there and take it personally and allow myself to spiral in shame. But I just had to sit there and take it. I wanted to take it because I knew she was hurting. And I knew that if I could just hold the bucket for her, then maybe this would just, again, help purge this pain and the suffering out so that we could somehow use that as a way to get past where we were and get move forward towards a healthy relationship. Hold the bucket, man. Hold the bucket. Yeah. The next piece of wisdom is sobriety does not equal recovery. I've said this on the podcast before. If you know me, I've said it on Castamonia calls before. Sobriety does not equal recovery. This is huge. It's something I had to take seriously. Sobriety can be the first step, and it's a huge, very important first step. But it's not recovery alone. God wants much more for me in this life than just sobriety. That's the quote, I've used his name already, but Tim Mavergeorge gave me. He said, God wants so much more for me in this life than just sobriety. And let's face it, I got into this recovery thing because I got busted. I'd hit rock bottom, and nothing will sober up a man quicker than being kicked out of the house, committing his life savings and much of my future income to my family, the potential and likelihood of losing my family, the embarrassment of divorce, and so on and so on. That's plenty to help me stay sober for a while. Before I'd got busted, I you know, tried to stop my insane behaviors using all the tactics I'd been taught in church, you know, like just stop, or maybe you don't have enough faith, or the typical white knuckling and the ups and downs of seasons where I'd see behavioral change start, but before it took root, I found myself back in my sin. But not just back, but back like gaining momentum back. I tried to pray it away, will it away, strong arm it away, rationalize and justify it away as if I was just doing what any man would. Heck, any man is doing it, right? But that all changed on September 30th of 2018. My sin, my addiction was no longer private. It was public in the worst way. My wife knew. And like a man with this incurable disease, I was now willing to go to any extremes to find a cure. My disease? Yes, the addiction, but more so, the disease for me was the inevitable death of my family. So yeah, I devoured every book on sexual addiction. I went to counseling. I joined Castamony. I prayed. I journaled. I read my Bible. And I looked for every possible cure for the inevitable. How can I save my family? And as I read each book and learned from my therapist and listened to every share at a Castamonia meeting, and what I learned through prayer and journaling and scripture was this: sobriety does not equal recovery. This can't be a behavioral change. It has to be a heart change. All right. Well, I think we've gone through like 12 pieces of wisdom. That should be enough to snack on for a while. So I hope you'll take those to heart. Hope you'll write them down. I would love your feedback on them. Look, I don't have all the answers, but what I do have is my experience, and I'm happy to share it with any of you. So please email me at puritypodcast@castamonia.org. I would love to reach out to you, talk to you, text with you, whatever it is would be helpful for you. My story is my story, but I love to share my story to see if it can impact others. We'll come back probably next episode with some more wisdom. This was fun for me anyway, just kind of reminding myself of some things I did, things I learned along the way, and I didn't even have to scratch both sides of my head with both hands to come up with all this. Anyway, appreciate you guys listening. Have a great day. Thanks for listening to the Purity Podcast. I'd love to hear some of your pro tips and lessons learned through recovery. please email them to me at puritypodcast@castamonia.org and let me know if I can use them on an upcoming episode. Thanks again for listening. Remember, as you travel this road of recovery, you're not walking alone.